Welcome to this installment of That's History, the segment where we look at current events and find echoes, parallels, and lessons from the past. This is Chris Satullo. I'm joined, as always, by Jonathan Zimmerman, professor of history at New York University. Welcome, Jonathan.
Good to be here, as always.
Well, so Donald Sterling, owner, for now, of the Los Angeles Clippers basketball team and the NBA, has received his just desserts, according to a lot of people. He's been banned from the NBA for life and fined a very large sum of money for racist remarks he made to a girlfriend in private. And most people are celebrating this as a just result. But you, Jonathan Zimmerman, have some concerns.
I do. And I should tell you, my concerns are not for Donald Sterling, who seems like a singularly loathsome individual. My concern is for what Louis Brandeis in 1890 called the right to privacy. There is a law in California that makes it illegal to tape anybody without their consent. And what concerns me is that in the rush to vilify Donald Sterling, who probably should be vilified, we're losing sight of the intrusion on privacy. And I find it ironic that so many people, especially on the left, who are concerned about data mining companies and the National Security Agency eroding our individual right to privacy, haven't been making more noise about Donald Sterling's.
So in that sense, it's a little bit, it all depends on who's getting skewered by that particular, who's being gored by that particular ox. This topic has driven you back to the writings of Justice Brandeis. What did you find?
Brandeis, obviously a seminal figure in the history of American law. He was born in Louisville, Kentucky, to Jewish immigrants from Prague. And by the time he's 18, he's at Harvard Law School, and he graduates first in his class. The guy who's second in his class is a guy named Samuel Warren, and they go into business together. And in 1890, they produce together for the Harvard Law Review an article called The Right to Privacy. The background on Warren is fascinating because in the interim, he had married the daughter of the senator from Delaware, a guy named Thomas Bayard. And Thomas Bayard would soon become the Secretary of State for Grover Cleveland, who himself had been hounded by the press because of a love child he had had out of marriage and then a 21-year-old bride that he married in the White House. The other thing that had happened is that in the 1880s, the handheld camera had been invented and sold by Kodak. Prior to that time, photography was a much more professional endeavor because the cameras were heavy and extremely difficult to operate. But Kodak made
it took forever to pose someone
indeed,
for a photo.
Kodak made it possible for anybody to take a picture of anyone. And between these two events, that is, what was happening to Cleveland and the press, and also the sale of this new camera, Brandeis developed a new set of concerns about individuals, what he called right to be left alone.
And does that eventually comes to the enunciation of the notion of some implied right of privacy in the Constitution? I believe the phrase was in the penumbra of the Constitution, even though the Constitution says nothing about a right to be left alone.
Absolutely. I mean, ironically, even though Brandeis can never have foreseen this, that right to privacy would be invoked in the Griswold case in the 60s about birth control, which would in turn become the foundation for Roe v. Wade, the abortion rights case in 1973.
Right. That decision relied very heavily on his writings about the right to privacy.
Absolutely. But it's also important to remember that this was the heyday, that is 1890, of the so-called yellow journalism. So you had figures like William Randolph Hearst who were making millions on these tabloids, which essentially stalked celebrities, although stalked isn't the metaphor they would have used then, but took pictures of them often surreptitiously and put them in newspapers. One of the cases Brandeis discussed in this Law Review article was a Broadway starlet who had been surreptitiously photographed in her tights, which was considered quite a scandal at the time, quite risque. She complained in the courts that, well, her right to privacy had been invaded. So really what Brandeis was trying to do was find a way to argue for, again, a right to be left alone at a time of massive technological change. It's actually quite amazing what he foresaw.
When you read what he wrote, it's almost as though he got in a time machine and went forward and saw Instagram and Twitter.
Absolutely. And indeed, once he joined the court, which he did under Woodrow Wilson, he would actually write the dissent in one of the first wiretapping cases called Olmstead. In the 20s, Olmstead was a bootlegger. This was the time of Prohibition. And Olmstead was wiretapped by the government as part of the case against him. And he went to court saying, you know, you should have a warrant to do this because under the Fourth Amendment, you can't search me, you know, well, without a warrant. And Justice Taft, the former president, now in the Supreme Court, said, oh, no, the Fourth Amendment doesn't apply to that. It just applies to a place. You know, nobody came into your home and looked at anything. Well, Brandeis quite presciently said, well, actually, you know, in the future, there are going to be all kinds of ways that you can spy on people with electronics. And we need to protect people from that. So he dissented in Olmstead. And again, quite presciently, because it wasn't until the 60s in the Katz case that the court actually reversed itself and said, indeed, if the state wants to bug you, wants to spy on you, however it does, it needs a warrant.
So back to the Donald Sterling case for a moment. The man, you know, has lost his NBA team. I mean, he will get to sell it. He will make a considerable amount of money versus his original investment. He's also been fined more than $2 million. All for something that he said in private. Now, one of the things that complicates the picture here is he has a long and not very appetizing history of doing and saying seriously racist things in his business dealings and in his private dealings. But this particular conversation he had with this woman was something that he said not for public consumption, not in a public sphere. And some people, not just yourself, but others have said, that's kind of a dangerous precedent because we all have bad moments. You know, do we want to be judged forever, lose our property based on something we say in the heat of the moment when we're really not functioning very well?
I think it's hugely dangerous. And I would ask our listeners to ask themselves if they've ever told an off-color or even a bigoted joke, or if they've ever spoken to a loved one in a hateful way, or if they've ever talked trash about a friend behind the friend's back. And I bet they have. And then the next question is, would you want that recorded without your knowledge or consent, that remark, and then put on the internet for everybody to hear and see? And I think the answer is no.
I think almost everyone has likely had the experience of sending an email in the heat of the moment to someone else and then suddenly discovering that it's been posted on the web or copied to 700 other people who you really didn't want to see what you thought you were communicating to one person. So there's a number of levels, a number of ways in which this can work. But I guess the question is now, despite that long constitutional history, is the right to privacy eroded beyond recognition or reclamation?
Well, you know, I would say, going back to Brandeis, that the presence of these new technologies actually makes it ever more important that we carve out zones that are independent of them. Again, Brandeis saw this coming, and he said there are going to be all kinds of new ways that both the state and our fellow citizens can spy on us. But that's precisely why we have to be vigilant. Look, I'm not making any brief for this guy, but the fact that he was already on record making bigoted comments and the fact that he had to pay a multi-million-dollar settlement for discriminating against minorities in the rental of his properties, that's actually the worst argument for this kind of breach of privacy. I mean, if we already knew all this dirt on the guy, why do we have to wiretap him surreptitiously and probably illegally?
Part of the explanation of that sequence is we have a new commissioner of the NBA. So he took different actions than his predecessor apparently was willing to do. But again, that's not a very satisfactory explanation on privacy.
No, I mean, as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and others have pointed out, there's nothing new in this story. It's true we have a new commissioner, but it's not like these surreptitious recordings illuminated anything about Mr. Sterling that we didn't know.
That's Jonathan Zimmerman, professor of history at New York University, and this has been That's History. Jonathan, I just want to make sure, did I ever send you an email or a photo that you could hold over me? Or are we good?
Oh, I'm not telling you, actually, because that would be a breach of my privacy.
Thanks, as always, Jonathan.
Thank you. It was fun.